Warning, this is the Freedom Fiends midweek non-radio podcast. Unlike our weekend live talk radio shows, where we adhere to all regulations and community standards, this cast may contain cussing and or prurient subject matter. If you are easily offended, please leave now. But tune in Saturdays and Sundays to our live talk radio show. If you're not easily offended, prepare to be entertained, informed, and enlightened.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com.
Nima!
Yeah?
Are you well-rested from your vacation at Club Fed?
I guess you could say that. It was a short stay.
You were in the municipal rape room all afternoon, and you're in a good mood from it, aren't you?
Yeah, I thought the government shut down, but they still, in the letter it said, you must explain why you did not comply. That was the exact wording.
Did you tell the judge, hey, I thought the government shut down?
No, I should have, but it was the same judge who I had seen before, and then I went and installed cable at his house, and then I saw him again. He was my judge again, so I was like, hey, is your cable still working? He's like, yeah, how's it going, man? I was like, what's up, dude? And he's all like, well, you can either, well, I don't want to bore you with the technical details, but it's all fine. I did some splaining, and I get 2 points on my license. In case you didn't know and you thought Texas was some kind of state where there's not a massive police state that keeps you down, it's not. Texas has a point system. If you get 6 points on your license, then you have to pay them every year. You don't just pay your fine. Every year they assess a fee for you sucking at complying with the state.
Wasn't there something about the post office getting in the way of interstate commerce here or intrastate commerce?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so the condition was, see, I paid the money. I paid them the money for the ticket right up front. And then the thing was I was going to have to take defensive driving, right? And so I thought, hey, man, it's 2013. There's all these online defensive courses. It'll be easy peasy. I'll take the course online. I'll pull an all-nighter. Because, man, I work 50 to 60 hours at my job. And I DJ a wedding or videography a wedding every Saturday, which requires some prep. And then it's, you know, a 6-hour to 7-hour chunk of my Saturday. And I do the Fiends. You know, we do 3 2-hour shows a week. And we have to pregame for it. So I thought, okay, I have enough time to where I can get 3 hours of sleep. I'll do this defensive driving the night before. It'll be done. But no, it's required that not only do you take it, but you have to have a special letter sent to the court. You can't just take it and, like, email the proof to them because it's 2013 and who needs paper anymore. No, the post office has to mail out a letter to the court or it's not valid. So I didn't give myself enough time.
So it sounds like the in some way the traffic court system is just a jobs program for mailmen.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's all just a cluster frack. I mean, it really is silly. What other big agency or big company that people always use that's customer facing would still require you, even though the information's there, would still require you to send a letter rather than just emailing the information?
It goes back to kings. Kings always sent letters and wanted letters.
Is that it? Is it an artifact of the legal system in that kind of a way?
I'm reading this book by Gary North, which I want to talk about later, Government by Emergency from 1983. And in it, he's describing Keynesian economists and people who run the government in a Keynesian way and says that they're so overly hopeful and cheerful that things will work out when they don't, that if they were to produce a movie about the life of Jesus right at the crucifixion, a Roman guard would ride up with a reprieve from the governor.
Yes. Jesus doesn't owe his life to us. He owes it to himself.
To the state. Yeah.
No, that's the whole Keynesian thing. They say it's okay to go into as much debt as you want because, hey, we just owe it to ourselves.
I know.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah, DJ had a clusterfuck with the post office recently. She regularly, like almost every day in her job, part of what she does is sends registered letters like 2 blocks away to the city court. And you know, can't send them by messenger because there isn't really a messenger service in the city and it would be too expensive. Can't hand deliver them can't just mail them normal, have to be sent a registered letter because they're court documents and there has to be proof that they've been received. And she always sends it to the person's name and the floor of the court and the address and the name and the court. And it always gets there and something came back as improperly addressed. It's a three-story building. Everybody in it knows everybody. It came back and she called the post office and they said, oh, well, you didn't put the suite number. And she's like, I never do that. It's never required. They don't even give them out usually in their addresses. Everyone knows each other in that building. And she said, he said, yeah, well, sometimes we get a new mailman who doesn't know and they're allowed to just send it back to you. And she started screeching at the post office saying, like, this is why you're going out of business and are only in business because of the government and everybody else is beating the pants off you in competition.
Yes. Why didn't you shut down?
Yeah.
It's silly, man, and I'm sick of it. But you got books to read? You're reading Gary North? Is that exciting for you?
Yeah. I got the book Government by Emergency because the old copy of it I had now the person that turned me on to it was Shane Sheed, who is in our Guns and Weed movie and says some of the pithiest things in the movie, and a lot of them, not that he doesn't have original thoughts, but a lot of them are very Gary North and out of this book, like influenced by it. Mm-hmm. And I bought the book to use in the Guns and Weed movie, to use the cover of it to illustrate the aggression principle. The, if you don't pay your taxes, they'll send men with guns. Or actually it was the line, every law is backed by the threat of a gun without, it was something Shane said. And then we put it in DJ saying it because there was so much of Shane in there. The line was, and we got his permission to do that. The line was, every gun is backed by the threat of a gun. If the gun isn't there, a law is just a suggestion. And we use this book cover of this pencil neck bureaucrat with a clipboard flanked by two like riot cops with rifles. Now, I thought because of that picture that that term, the aggression principle, would be in this book. But so far I haven't found it, and I'm kind of surprised that this book isn't actually a book about how horrible the government is. It's actually a guide for investors from 1983 based on the premise that you need to structure your investments in a way to survive what Gary North thought was coming, which was full-on price and wage controls, which hasn't really happened yet. But he was giving advice based on that will probably happen sooner or later. And there's a lot of amazing insight into how the economy works and how the government works. And I don't even think North is probably a full-on non-aggressionist. I think he wants a government the size you can drown in a bathtub and then have it run by Christians. That's the impression I get from reading him.
Yeah. I'm reading books, too. I got Gunproof Your Children by Masad Ayoub. And it was waiting on my doorstep, courtesy of Amazon today.
Along with some tubes. You have a tube addiction. You have to have them.
The tubes came yesterday. You have to have Amazon
them delivered with your live lobsters, which Amazon also sells.
Everything, yeah. And if you want some cool books, tubes, or lobsters, go to Amazon.com for our stuff.
Lobster tube books. They actually have 5 pages of live lobsters. There's a thing in Big Bang Theory where one of the guys just he has his heart broken and he just sits home in his underwear ordering live lobsters and eating them in his underwear. He's like in his underwear with a bib eating live lobsters and going,
aah. Eating them while they're alive? Out of the tank that they come in?
Cooking them and dipping them in butter. Oh, okay. Just being a slob crying in his lobsters. And I was
that's high class.
I was like, that's not a thing. And I looked it up and there's 5 pages of live lobsters on Amazon. That's the market, baby.
That is the market. They're probably making me hungry.
They're probably fresher than when you go to a grocery store because they're probably like one step away from the ship in Maine when you order them on Amazon.
Yeah, I wonder because you figure the store has to order them from somewhere too. So when the store orders them, they go from a truck to a tank and then sit there and live there for a while. But if you get the truck to come directly to your house, then you remove the middleman.
Yep. They should just get the boat to come to your house in Wyoming.
Yeah. I'm also reading Welcome to Your Child's Brain by Sandra Amott and Sam Wang. That's his real name. And it's actually pretty interesting, too. I guess I'm getting on the whole buy books about the kid you're about to have bandwagon.
Yeah.
And Welcome to Your Child's Brain is really cool because it's from 2011 and it's sort of a compendium of the most recent, at least as of 2011, research on kids' brains, man. And kids' brains are amazing. Like, they're not just like potatoes when they come out of the womb. They're not just blank slates. They actually already have identities, and they're learning machines. And the way the brain grows, I found really interesting, is it doesn't grow in areas that are based on what your environment is. Like, it doesn't say, oh, well, I live in this kind of environment, I must grow these areas of my brain. No, it grows everything, massive amounts of brain cells, and then the ones that don't get used get disposed of.
Doesn't a large percentage of the growth of a human brain occur in the first few years, unlike the rest of the body?
Yeah, between 0 and 1, the brain grows to about 70% of what it will be when you're an adult human.
Wow.
And then to 80% by the time you're 2.
Awesome. And then when you're like 18, you start killing brain cells. With Cocodril, which is Cocodril has made it to America. Did you see that? And it's interesting. Crocodile. It's made it to Phoenix. And for those who don't know, we've been talking about Crocodil for about 2 years now. It's a home-brewed opiate derivation made from over-the-counter. You can buy codeine pills over-the-counter in Russia, and people turn it into something like heroin using like gasoline and iodine and household crap and turpentine.
It's really awful. I guess heroin is to Crocodil, or Crocodil is to heroin, what meth would be to something like, I don't know, cocaine. Like, it's the same class. You're trying to get that same kind of feel out of it, but it's made with a bunch of household solvents and disgusting stuff that desperate people use to get high.
If you want an analogy, I'd say Crocodil is to heroin what bathtub poisonous gin made during the Depression out of like rubbing alcohol and grapes would be to good liqueur.
I guess so. I guess we shouldn't sully meth's name because it's come so far due to Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is good meth out there. There's also crappy meth out there. But the thing about Crocodil is it's not the same drug chemically as heroin. And the drug that it is,
there's a medical term for
desimorphine. Now, desimorphine in and of itself is no more harmful than morphine. I mean, there is pharmaceutically produced desimorphine.
Oh, there is.
But Crocodil is like bathtub desimorphine that still contains gasoline in it that you can't filter out. That's the problem. You're basically injecting gasoline when you inject Crocodil. Right.
And for those who don't know, the side effects are – or not even the side effect. Like, the thing that it does to you is rots your skin, rots your body parts. People lose their limbs.
Yeah.
And before they fall off, the flesh will fall off the bone. It looks like crocodile skin. That's why they call it Crocodil.
Crocodil. But it's been found in Phoenix, which is kind of interesting because think about who's the sheriff in Phoenix.
Arpaio.
Yeah.
The drug warrior.
Yeah.
The one who supposedly is so strict that he is the one to emulate for drug warriors everywhere.
Yeah. So
like,
my,
doesn't he makes his inmates live outside in tent cities and wear pink panties if they don't obey him. Mm-hmm. Creepy stuff like that. Is that right?
Yeah. So basically he's cracked down on drugs so hard that it's opened up a market for something much horrible than the drugs he's cracking down on.
Yeah. Put that on Joe Arpaio's head. That's his fault, man.
It's his fault, man.
Yeah.
He built that.
If there were Nuremberg trials, he would be lethally injected with massive amounts of Crocodil.
But there won't be, and we're peaceful. Yeah, and the name of this episode, by the way, is Freedom Fiends Trip the Independent Thought Alarm. Because I found a picture of that scene from The Simpsons where Lisa is saying something against the teacher, and the teacher reaches under her desk and pushes a button that says Independent Thought Alarm.
Yes. I wonder if the NSA agents also have those under their desks.
Well, yeah, they have them right now. And speaking of cool, interesting things, Adam Kokesh did a shout out. I'm going to play this and then we'll discuss this. He opens his new he's doing podcasts from jail. Basically, he collect calls his girlfriend or pays the $1 a minute to make a call from jail, and she records it and puts it up on YouTube. with just
that's
a,
some street
a picture
cred
of him.
For the Liberty Movement.
That
man.
Is, man.
I dig that.
That is. Yeah. It reminds me of that song by Bad Brains, Sacred Love, that the vocal is recorded from jail, and the guy was in jail for pot. And yeah, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And Adam Kokesh may or may not be doing a shout out to the Freedom Fiends at the beginning of this, or he may just be genericizing the term, which we're fine with. So let's play this and listen to it.
Hello, my fellow Liberty lovers and Freedom Fiends. Welcome to a special.
Yeah, play that again.
Hello, my fellow Liberty lovers and Freedom Fiends. Welcome to a special mail call edition of the Adam versus the Man podcast. Come.
Yeah. So he says, hello, my fellow Liberty lovers and Freedom Fiends.
It sounds like he's co-hosting our show, doesn't it? I mean, that's how we start every episode.
Hello,
I mean, not
Freedom
with the Liberty
Fiends.
Lovers thing.
I know.
Yeah, hello.
Or maybe Freedom he's Fiends. Saying that everyone else is Liberty Lovers and we're not. We're Freedom Fiends. We're different. But I
different bad or different good?
Oh, I'm joking. I'm saying different bad. Like, you know, if I was addressing a bunch of people in D.C., I'd say, welcome, politicians, and also humans. Or welcome, humans, politicians. Right. Yeah.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and Michael.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
You were thinking maybe he's just in jail and, like, jailhouse, you know, using jailhouse terminology. He's probably hearing the word fiend.
Yeah.
But I found it very interesting. Although maybe, you know, we did kind of shout out to him last week. Maybe someone told him about it, because we said something like the government's going to shut down, and it's not really going to shut down. I mean, you won't be able to go to the dinosaur museum, but Adam Kokesh will still be in a cage for something that shouldn't be a crime.
Mm. Maybe. I lean on the towards the side that he's just picked it up. It's somewhere floating around his brain, and it came out of his mouth.
I was kind of honored, though. You know, I mean, back when I was reading Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman when I was 12, if you told me that someday a political prisoner in prison would be doing that, I don't know personally, would be doing a shout out to me from his broadcast from jail, I would have thought it was the coolest thing in the world, man.
That's true. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm on it too. Yeah. I feel really cool about that. Yeah. Even if it is just floating in his head, he's heard it before, right? Because you had pod beef.
I did.
Him, so
yeah. The only word
there's some synapse in his brain firing that's connecting you and the Freedom Fiends and Kokesh in his head.
But we kissed and made up too. So. Yeah, we had a beef and then we kissed and made up. So speaking of beef, I want to talk about Chris Cantrell.
No, you still got it wrong. Try again.
Cantwell.
He can't
tell me things well. I don't know this guy from Adam Kokesh. Now, I don't know Cantwell. I've never spoken to him. He kind of burst on the scene like 3 days ago with this, or not 3 months ago, probably, with like, he basically took Larkin Rose's idea of when's it okay to shoot in self-defense and raised the stakes and said, it'd be ethical to shoot your mailman. I don't recommend it, but it'd be ethical. And I don't even want to get into that ball of worms or it's first of all, it's an argument that's not new, and he's acting like he invented the argument. It's been discussed for 30 years, you know, and it's not my argument. I mean, Claire Wolf said we're at an odd time in history. She said this 15 years ago. She said it's too late to change anything by voting and too early to shoot the bastards. And that's what Claire Wolf said 15 years ago. And that sums up even better than what Larkin said, but way better than everything Chris Cantwell said. My beef with him is his obsessive need to see his name in print. And I have invented a new word, and it's Cantwellian. Sounds like Orwellian, but it's whereas Orwellian means horrifying, Cantwellian means just annoying. The definition of Cantwellian is an obsessive need to see your name in print or hear it spoken, regardless of the context. And the reason I say that is I'm just witnessing this. Like, for instance, somebody pointed out, sent me a copy of a thread on Facebook where Cantwell had said, I heard that the Freedom Fiends mentioned me. Are they worth checking out? You know, like, not, I'm going to, basically saying, look, someone talked about me. And then not bothering himself, just making a point of, look, someone talked about me, and then asking people to do the work for him.
Yeah, why would he ask that? That seems really silly. Wouldn't it be more work to ask your friends and then reply to their responses and then read all their replies?
I know.
Rather than just clicking the link and clicking play?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, guy. Come on.
Yep. So, but apparently he's like hyper interested with seeing his name in print, and every time someone mentions him, he does a blog post about it, and he does really weird things with it, like this one called Ben Stone of Bad Quaker Refuses Cantwell Debate. And it starts, after dedicating his second Bad Quaker podcast to me personally. Okay, the episode he's talking about, Ben mentioned Chris Cantwell like two or three sentences worth. And Cantwell sees that as, after dedicating a whole show to me, that's, I don't know what to make of that. But then he didn't really.
And the first time he talked about him too, it wasn't a whole show either.
Right,
it was,
right.
He played a YouTube clip of Cantwell ranting about how the Adam Kokesh armed march on DC needs to be an armed revolution, and it's time to get some, and we're going to send those bastards back to the hell they came from, and all this kind of stuff. And Ben just went through it bit by bit, explaining how ridiculous it all was. But it didn't, I don't even think it took up the whole show. That concept took up the whole show, but it wasn't all about Cantwell.
Exactly.
It was about the horrible ideas that Cantwell has decided to hitch his wagon to.
Yeah, and then in this same blog post, he says, I'm also hearing that Ben went on the Freedom Fiends and called me the Miley Cyrus of the Liberty Movement. Now, here's the interesting thing. Chris Cantwell has been called the Miley Cyrus of the Liberty Movement exactly twice on the Freedom Fiends, once when a regular show when you were co-hosting, and once when Ben was subbing for you, and both times it was me that said it, not Ben. So whoever is analyzing the data of the world for Cantwell to see mentions, you know, acting as his clip service, handing him daily reports of, yes, master, someone spoke of you on the internet, they're getting it wrong, because Ben didn't say that.
The first time you said it too, you didn't say it. You said, I've heard people call Cantwell the Miley Cyrus of the Liberty Movement. How hilarious is that?
Well,
we both had a good chuckle.
They didn't say that phrase exactly. I think it was somewhere somebody said something like, you know, this whole stuff with Cantwell of everyone talking about it is a distraction from real issues like the NSA.
Just like Miley
Syria.
Cyrus twerking at the VMAs.
Right. Mm. And I just kind of took it and codified it to the Miley Cyrus of the Liberty Movement because it sounded funny and kind of
You made it poppy. Got it.
I made it poppy, yeah. And I was more speaking about people's reaction to Cantwell than Cantwell, and I explained that. And but he thinks Ben says that, and he also, like, Cantwell insists, and this is part of being Cantwellian. Cantwell insists, and he said this on that thread where he said, has anyone heard the Freedom Fiends? Are they worth me listening to? And 15 of his friends said, yeah, they're great. He insists that anybody who writes about him owes to him the privilege that they write him, tell them he talked about them, and invite them to come back. Even like, and all of his friends and him, or some of his friends that didn't know who the Fiends were, like, automatically assume that if anyone talks about you, they're bashing you, so you should be able to go on and debate them. And we have never really bashed him until today. And I don't think you are. I think the guy's a decent writer. I think his blog posts are really good sometimes. I think when he gets on video and he's drunk and he's screaming about shit, he sounds ridiculous. And I think when he clutches at, oh my God, people are talking about me, it's wonderful, and they owe me an invitation onto their bandwidth, I think it's really petty. And I think he's, as one person put it, he's in the puppy love phase with fame. And I will give him some advice. Here's what this is. I'm not going to have him on the Fiends. I'm not going to give him our bandwidth. I mean, he has this like fairness doctrine idea, which is what the Democrats put into law under Harry Truman, that on radio, if you had one side, you had to show the other side. Then it was strengthened under LBJ. So if he wants to be like Harry Truman and LBJ, he can just keep obsessively Googling his name. I'm not going to give him time that I've worked hard for. And he can reply wherever he wants. He's got a popular blog. He can bash us there. But really, I'm giving him like some unasked for big brotherly advice. He's got a good thing with writing. He's pretty good at it. He hasn't transferred it to video yet. He sounds screechy and drunk in most of his videos. And the main thing that's harming him from getting to where he wants to be is this obsessive, like, me, can't Wellian bullshit. And I also think he needs – I think it's untreated alcoholism, because I've been sober for almost 20 years, and I know that that's how alcoholics are. And I've heard him say in drunken rants on video, like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I mean, his tagline is anarchist, atheist, asshole. I guess it's not alcoholic, but if he were just an anarchist and an atheist, he'd have a lot more going for him. But he has this belief, I think, that the way to make it in liberty is to walk in and break a chair over the biggest guy, everybody's head, you know, to make a name for himself.
Well, that's his whole concept with how liberty gets won. I mean, that's my biggest beef I have with Cantwell. I don't really care who he is as a person. But you said, and I believe you're right, that no one person can harm the liberty movement or the liberty mission. I agree with that. But I think that's because ideas that are Cantwellian, if I can borrow your coinage here, do harm to – well, they don't do harm, but they're so false that they will fall off. They will slough
okay,
off.
You're,
there
you're
will be
using,
a liberty menstruation period.
Let's make it clear. War is menstrual envy. To quote 9353, and then they got it from Nick Zed. You're using Cantwellian in two different ways. You're using it the old way. The old way, I said, was using it to discuss, like, is it time to shoot people?
Okay.
No, the new way, that's not even Cantwellian. That's like Claire Wolfian. You know, that goes back to like when Chris Cantwell was like holding on to his mama's skirt when he was two.
No, I don't think it is Claire Wolfian. I think
she wasn't even really saying it. Let's not call it Cantwellian. Let's just say the is it time argument. That's what he's giving. Or the is it moral argument. I don't even want to go there because it's not interesting to me. And, you know, if he wants to come and debate people. See, the thing is, Ben didn't even necessarily disagree with him on that. Like, we're disagreeing with him. Ben, that's not Ben's problem with him. But, you know, his problem was the logical fallacies. Now, my thing is that Cantwellian now means an obsessive – let me read the definition. I'll put it in the Fiend's Glossary. An obsessive need to see your name in print or hear it spoken regardless of the context. That's Cantwellian.
Okay. Okay. So you don't want to discuss his ideas at all, though?
No, he's doing a fine job discussing them everywhere possible. And also, like, you know, he doesn't basically, when people give him lots of good press, he doesn't blog about it. Like, Free Talk Live talked about him for a week, but it was largely Ian being in favor, basically disagreeing with the premise, but saying that he's going to still be his friend and invite him to events, even though the Free State Project banned him. And yeah, I quit the Free State Project that same week, not because of him, but, you know, he basically sees his name in print and then immediately says, these people have to invite me on as a guest. And I'm like, no, man. Okay, here's the other thing. He recently did a blog post where he outed a bunch of people who invited him into his home as committing felonies and enumerated the felonies and misdemeanors that they committed. I think that's kind of Stacey Litzian, man. He's not the Miley Cyrus of Liberty Movement. That reminds me more of Stacey Litz. And Chris Cantwell hasn't been in Liberty long enough to know who Stacey Litz is, but that happened a year or two ago. Go look it up, man. She's someone that narked out a bunch of her friends. And I think that Cantwell basically narked out a bunch of people who invited him into his home. I think that's not right.
Into their home. Well, I guess not their home, but the place they were living.
Yeah. The place they were allowed to be by the guy on the lease, by Adam Kokesh.
Right. There you go. All right. Well, let's just drop the Cantwell thing there. I think we're getting into a little too much pod beef here, which is fun. I mean, I don't disagree with anything
you
said.
Hey, man, he'll beef really hard even if you don't beef with him. I can't imagine what he's going to do with this. He'll go, oh, my God, people are discussing me. I must write a feisty blog post. Whee! I'm the center of attention for a moment. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. I mean, we're doing him a favor, right?
Yeah. Yeah. we're giving him what he wants. And we're never going to have him on the Fiends because I don't. Here's the thing. He wants to go on people's shows to to like give them their hard-earned airtime to argue their points. And my only point with him is that I find him unpleasant and really tedious. And having him come on here and yell at me isn't going to change my mind on that. That's my final sting on the whole thing.
Okay, fair enough.
Go to an AA meeting, man. Chris Cantwell. There are atheist AA meetings, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think his conclusions come from his unresolved resentment and anger, too.
Yeah.
I think that his worldview is colored by his anger, and that's why I don't think it is well-reasoned. I don't think it's accurate, and I hope that people realize that. And I don't really see him getting a big following of people who are going to go out and say, hey, let's go shoot the nearest postman that comes to deliver our mail. I hope that wouldn't happen, and
he's
pretty
sure
it won't.
He's got a following. Of people who are like, yeah, Chris Cantwell tells it like it is. Everyone else is pussycoating it. But, you know, I mean, those are people that are going to become very useful to three-letter government organizations. I don't think he's a COINTELPRO agent, but I think he's going to end up being what they call a useful idiot. And he's not even an idiot. He's a very intelligent person. But he's going to end up being a useful idiot.
Here's the thing. To the average postman, the stuff that ANCAPs and voluntarists talk about is a different language. There's no malice in most of these postal guys. Yeah. Or most government employees anyway. They don't know that they're aggressing on you. How can you ascribe a moral position to them and say that they deserve to be put to death? Is basically what you're applying when they have no knowledge that they're aggressing on you.
Maybe a postal worker would go after Chris Cantwell. I mean, the term going postal isn't because they have all been peaceful throughout history.
Right. And, you know, if somebody, whoever it was, whatever their job title, was immediately trying to end your life and you defended yourself and won, I think there'd be very few people that wouldn't say, well, you had to do what you had to do. Good job for defending your own life. I don't think anybody's arguing against that at all. But Chris is trying to project that we're saying, oh, well, self-defense is bad, and trying to put some kind of inconsistency on us. But I think the consistency lies in if your postman walks up and delivers a letter, he's not aggressing on you. The government or the state aggressed on you to pay his paycheck, but they're the ones who took the money. And the responsibility for that is diffuse. There's nobody's butt you can kick. Just like when my car couldn't pass inspection, there was nobody's butt I could kick. I wouldn't be justified to go into the DMV and start shooting at all, in any sense of the word.
Because
the responsibility isn't one person. There's not one person I can trace back the responsibility for failing my car to. So attack the idea. It's diffuse because it's in so many people's heads. And until people realize it's a collective hallucination. Wait, how do you say it, Michael?
Hallucination.
That's it. Until people realize that it's one of those, nothing's ever going
to
change.
Yeah. Here's my final word on it before we go to the argument, before we go to the market. Chris Cantwell could argue with me till the cows come home, but I could do something for him that very few people in Liberty can do, which is give him some advice from someone who's been there. A, the fame for the need of fame will eat you and will be counterproductive, and you'll be a forgotten nobody in 6 months. You should concentrate on the stuff you're doing well that doesn't involve beefing. B, you should find yourself the one atheist AA meeting or agnostic AA meeting in your town and go to it and get a sponsor and get sober. Because I really believe that if Cantwell doesn't get sober, he's going to end up on the 6 o'clock news in a way that's really fucked up. And I hope that doesn't happen, because it won't be good for him and it won't be good for us.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't either.
All right, let's go to the market.
Thoughts are with you. Yep.
This is Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends. Using government-printed funny money fuels and encourages wars abroad, and the wars at home against you and all you hold dear. Why should you remain beholden to self-appointed federal kings who don't care if you starve in a cage? Become your own king today by owning gold and silver from Midas Resources. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Midas Resources banner over on the right, or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Nima, did you hear about the Peacekeeper smartphone app?
I did not. I assume we're recording by your tone of voice.
Yeah, we are.
I thought we were still pre-gaming. Okay.
No.
No, I didn't. What is it?
I just sent it to you. It's an app someone made up that basically replaces the police. It's an app on for cell phones, and he's doing a Kickstarter for it, and I'm all for this. People should donate, or Indiegogo, they should donate to help him get the app to market. It's a smartphone app that lets you create your own first responder network in your neighborhood. You can add anyone you trust as an emergency contact and have instant real-time communication with them in the event of a home invasion, fire, medical emergency. These people can likely respond much faster than any police force. Like they say, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah. I wonder why nobody's thought of that. I mean, 911 is such an old model. You have to call a certain number and it goes to a dispatch center, and then they have to get a hold of, put out a bulletin to anybody who's in the area, who then will respond if they're not too busy stuffing their face with donuts. if you have everybody in the community that has the ability to save somebody in the event of a fire or, you know, a break-in or a home invasion. I don't know. It just feels like there's more people who could theoretically respond. And then at that point, it's not like their job. It's more of a sense of a duty. They're not just sitting there sucking up overtime. They're actually going to feel like they're doing some good in the world.
Yeah. Internet to replace government by 2020.
Yeah, exactly. So what is this? People need to the app doesn't exist yet, or it's just a concept?
I don't know. Let's look. Let's see. It looks like a great idea.
Yeah. You can contribute to the Indiegogo campaign if you want to help get the app to market. So right now it's just a concept. There's a video for it, so he's done some work, it looks like.
He's made a video.
Report for neighbor. Well, no, there's a video with like a picture of – I don't know if that's just a concept app or if he's got like a beta or what. Are you playing it?
Yeah,
is it somebody rapping?
It's I don't know what that is, man. I think that's some. That's an ad that this site, his blog site, stuck in. Yeah.
Okay.
At first, I thought it's like a nerdy white guy walking, and these like four black youths come up to him, and there's like, yo, something, something, and then he starts rapping. I thought it was like, this will work if you're a nerdy white guy and black youths corner you and accost you and say things to you.
Yes, it's the rap app.
It's the rap app. Yeah.
Just tap it, and you'll start spitting.
No, it's completely unrelated, but randomly funny. Okay. Yeah. So, Peacekeepers, I like the idea of this. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. I think this is the kind of thinking that people need to do. This is what makes the state go away. This is what makes cops go away too. Because every state, every government rests on the consent of the governed, no matter how totalitarian it is. And if people just don't see a need for cops, because right now people are like, yeah, the government sucks. Yeah, it sucks. But hey, we got to have cops.
What can you do?
What are we going to do? We got to have firemen. And those are kind of the root things that people think of. They think of roads, they think of police services, they think of fire services. So, if you could just say, hey, well, what if I told you there's this thing and could prove to you that it's better than police? What if in places like Detroit, I know they're doing a lot of private security there, but what if there is something like this that's not something that's geographically specific, you know, something that anybody could download the same app? You'd have the same app in Detroit as you would have in Houston. But of course, you'd have a different group of people.
Well,
using
I think that's what this. Yeah,
place.
That's what this is. Like, it's an app where you program in. You know, there's different buttons for fire, police, whatever, and you program in groups of people. There's something sort of like that that's not app based and wouldn't be as one touch. In New Hampshire, there's something called Porcupine 411 and Porcupine 911 411 is an information service, and the 911 is it's a phone number that when you call it, it starts audio recording whatever is happening, like if the police are hassling you. And then as soon as the call's done, or maybe while it's going, I'm not sure which, it starts transmitting it to people who've signed up to receive it.
Here's the other thing I see as a really great potential for something like this is one of the things that's so great about the app economy is it's scalable, right? So there's free apps. Like I can download Angry Birds and play it for free, but then they're trying to sell me things all along the way. That's how they make their money to keep it going and keep developing new ones. So you could have a situation where you have an app. Say you're not too scared, but you think something weird's going down. Maybe you tap the free button. Maybe there's a whole free category of free services or people who are volunteers, like a volunteer network. But then say, you know, your house is on fire. It's really flaming up good. You don't know. And your daughter is there in a room. Maybe there's price ranges of networks, like super professional network, and you click on that and you know that you're probably gonna have to pay some money after the fact, but you're willing to.
Well, there we did some beta testing on the vaporware.
On the vaporware,
they can send us our 0.001 Bitcoin royalty now.
Really. Well, maybe this guy doesn't even do it, but I think it's still a great concept, and I think somebody will do something like this that will, like you said, internet to replace government by, what was it, 2020?
2020.
I wish it were 2014, man.
The not too distant future. It's time.
Well, they're teasing me with this shutdown. I want it to just, oh man, they're so close.
Did you hear about the group of anarchist World War II vets who like had a bus trip? Hey, let's reboot real quick. Sorry, I had to take a break to put on some blue goo. You ever use blue goo? We should do ads for blue goo.
No, I don't know what that is. What is that? Is that old people stuff?
Yeah. It's kind of in a tube. It kind of looks like toothpaste, and you rub it on painful shoulders and joints, and you feel better. Basically, when I spend 8 hours...
Is it like Icy Hot? Yeah. It's menthol?
Very much like it. When I spend 8 hours a day making fiends calls and doing fiends work, I get cramps in my shoulder about every other week for a couple days. And it's I was going to say, let's cut this one short today. But now that I put on some blue goo, I'm all ready. All right.
I'm a big fan of the Epsom salt. And speaking of Epsom salt, we were talking about World War II veterans, weren't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this story is a perfect example of the fact that this whole government shutdown thing is nothing but Washington Monument Syndrome. We talked about that before in a cast, haven't we?
No.
No? There's a Wikipedia entry on it. Basically, it's the concept, and I think it comes from like 1969 or something, when there was something similar that happened, and the leader of the national parks, decided, well, let's just shut everything down, you know? We'll see how much they hate their government when we shut down the Washington Monument. And somebody coined a term. It's called the Washington Monument Syndrome. Whenever there's trouble with the budget, trouble passing a budget, you just shut down all the fun, happy stuff that people are into doing.
And, you shut down the dinosaur museum, but keep the federal drug courts open.
Right, right. Which somebody brought up the wonderful point that about them closing national parks is, doesn't it take money, time, and effort to go put barriers around the parks?
Ben Stone told me today they have like parks police out there, you know, like driving stakes into the ground around things down on the Capitol Mall to put, you know, put big ropes around them so you can't go near them.
Right. Well, that was the most beautiful thing about this World War II veteran story is that the vets knew it. They figured it out because it was an open air monument. It was all like concrete. It was like nothing that could be damaged, something that would just be fine to just be left alone, let people walk on it. You don't need to have an attendant. You don't need to have somebody getting, selling tickets or anything like that. But they did spend the time and they paid somebody money, tax money, to put up barriers around the whole thing. And the vets were like, this is BS. Why would you put barriers around it? And so what they do, they just move the barriers.
Hmm. Yeah, but a senator was involved with that. You know, it was the old guys, you know, had this trip planned for a long time to go in their wheelchairs with their oxygen and, you know, see the World War II memorial, you know, because they were in World War II, to worship at the altar of the state, basically. Mm. And they kind of pulled an anarchist move. They kind of just went anyway, even though it was closed. But a senator or congressman that they called came with them, and he moved the barriers. So he knew that he wouldn't – they might get arrested. He won't get arrested, and he'll get a photo op out of it. So he did it.
Oh, he'll get a photo op. Yeah. Yeah, and he'll be able to talk about it. Okay.
Yeah, if you ever want – basically, that's about the only thing that congressmen and senators can do good is if you ever need like – a government gun that isn't really a gun per se, but is just a photo op. They'll come do it, man. They'll come. They won't. They won't help you with something they can't get a photo op out of. A really good example is there's a movie called Hot Coffee. You ever heard of it?
Mm-mm.
It's a documentary on Netflix. It's really good. It's basically a documentary making the point that we don't need what's it called? Tort reform. You know, basically there shouldn't be limits on amounts that that lawsuits can take and that it harms people when they do. And also the secondary thing of it is that employment contracts are bad when they stipulate that anything has to be settled in arbitration because now that doesn't sound very like something I'd endorse, but I do endorse it because it generally says or almost always says that the person presenting the contract gets to pick the arbitrator. And a lot of times they're not very impartial. And a lot of things these days, like phone contracts and internet contracts, will add that in later after the fact in 20 pages of legalese that like comes with your phone bill that you sign by throwing it away. It basically they'll say like if you in the contract it'll say you agree to all these terms and if you ever use our service again, you have agreed to them, you know?
Yeah.
So you've signed the contract by continuing to use the service. A really good example of that is in this movie. There was a woman, young woman, 19-year-old, blonde, pretty woman from Texas who was working for, I believe it was Halliburton, but don't hold me to that. It was some Middle East contractor. And she was over in the Middle East and she was raped by a bunch of her coworkers. While over there working and drugged and raped. And, you know, it was worse than if it happened in this country where your only recourse would be to go to the police because she couldn't go to the police. When she reported it, she was locked in a storage container and guarded with armed men to keep her from making a phone call.
Wow.
And she finally got a hold of a phone for a minute and called her family overseas here. And her dad was like, I'll do whatever I can. And he called his congressman and his congressman sent in the Marines to rescue her. And, you know, that was a place where Senator congressman goes, oh, photo op, saving a young, pretty blonde girl held prisoner in a foreign land. I'll send in the Marines and get a photo op.
You know, I guess that's something to keep in mind, you know, if you're ever in a situation and you think that calling a politician might help, it'll be something like that, that they're going to get something out of.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And the reason the movie's called Hot Coffee is it starts with talking about the woman who sued McDonald's after being burned. Now, what do you know about that story, about that lawsuit?
From what I know, all she was really asking for was for them to pay her medical bills, and I think they did. I remember it's not supposed to be such a big deal as people make it out to be, but I can't remember why.
If you ask most people, and they actually do man on the street in this, and it was the same answer I would have given. It was like, oh, she was some lady who wanted a payday and spilled some coffee and got a little uncomfortable and sued McDonald's for $20 kajillion.
No, she got like third degree burns or something. And it was like really awful. She just wanted some medical compensation.
She wanted her medical. She had to have skin grafts and she had third degree burns. Right. And it wasn't like, oh, she got a little uncomfortable. And it was there was some fault in McDonald's because they have it in their employee manual that they have to every hour check the temperature of the coffee. And it has to be like, I don't know, it's something like 110 degrees, and it was something like, you know, 200 degrees, some discrepancy like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the, you know, there was some fault in McDonald's. And in cases like that, the jury decides, you know, they decided it was partially her fault and partially McDonald's fault. The thing was, she asked McDonald's to just pay her medical bills, and they were like,
that's right.
Go away, you know. If they hadn't done that, I mean, they could have gotten off for like $80,000, but she was incensed by it and sued him for a lot of money and I think deserved it. But immediately public perception went to, oh, she's a gold digger. She's just trying to rip people off. And the way that happened was like that night, you know, there were like Tonight Show or some comic, like basically I think some phone calls were made. And they were like, write some jokes, you know, make this look ridiculous.
There you go. But yeah, about the – so the tort reform. So the movie was trying to make it out to be what? That there should be a limit or there shouldn't be a
limit
to the amount
of money? There should not be a limit. Okay. I mean, they gave several the premise was that there should not be a limit and that the company shouldn't be able to universally – say that things can't be settled in court. They have to be settled in arbitration with the arbitrator picked by the company. Now I'm looking it up. The woman, it was Halliburton, and the woman's name was Jamie Lee, Jamieleigh, Jamie Lee Jones versus Halliburton. And yeah. And the thing was like, she didn't, you know, she had trouble getting any money or any recourse out of Halliburton because their contract said
– because they're Halliburton, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Nobody goes up against Dick Cheney and wins.
Yeah. I mean, he shot his lawyer in the face and his lawyer apologized. That's the joke too, and there's more to it than that. But that there is truth in all that.
Yeah. And I guess I can get on board with those things. You know, I don't think there should be any kind of legal limit that's hard and fast because it seems like when it comes to court proceedings, I mean, even sans the state, every case is unique. And why would you want there to be some arbitrary barrier that couldn't have foreseen what the current case is, keeping justice – I mean, take that word how you want – but keeping the party from being made as whole as possible because of some law that somebody wrote years ago. Seems silly. And then about the arbitration thing, you know, I faced that personally when I was trying to leave the TV station I was at, is that was in my contract. And like the lawyer who I talked to pointed out, some of the things about this contract were signed under duress. And, you know, when there are discrepancies in a contract as well, you know, something that can be viewed one way or the other, it's ambivalent in a way. It should fall on the person who wrote the contract. You know, they're the ones responsible for it being vague, not me, the person who signed the contract. And I guess what
the go ahead and finish. I'll tell you this; it's pretty funny.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, and so I was really concerned that if it does go, you know, and I'm not taking it to any kind of real court, but if I go to dispute it and I already have signed to where I have to go to an arbitration thing, I'm like, well, why would the arbitration company ever take my side? And I guess I know their reputation is supposed to be on the line and this and that, and that's what we always say about LibPair, but it's not LibPair yet, you know, and these kind of companies, I'm pretty sure they know which side their bread is buttered on.
Yeah, because
Are they going to rule in favor of the company that's, you know, one of their biggest contracts that pays them millions of dollars a year, or some guy they've never heard of, right?
Yeah, whereas in LibPair, you'd probably have storefront arbitrators that would have a good rating with people.
Right, and it seems like the appropriate thing to put in a contract would be settled by arbitration to be done by a party we can both agree upon, you know, an arbitrator we both agree to, kind of a thing. You know, if the contract says an arbitrator of our choosing who we've already picked and is on retainer for us for the past decade, then you know something's fishy about that contract.
Yeah, I was going to say that, a movie's telling a pretty dire story when the only levity in the movie pretty much comes out of the mouth of Al Franken, and he's acting as a senator, not as a Saturday Night Live member. He said in this movie, there was a Senate hearing in this where he's talking to a representative from the arbitration group that Halliburton hired, and the girl who was harmed is sitting next to Franken, and of course she's reading a statement that sounds like it was prepared by, you know, the Democrat. I mean, this is generally Democrats are against tort reform and Republicans are in favor of it. There are exceptions, but that's generally the way it is. And generally big corporations are in favor of tort reform, and you know, everybody else is against it. But the guy from Halliburton's arbitration unit, or either the company that did the arbitration, or a umbrella group that deals with that arbitrator and other large arbitrators, was saying under questioning in Al Franken was like, well, why do we need to have this limited to an arbitrator picked by the company that writes the contract? And the arbitration guy said, well, it definitely improves working conditions. And Franken interrupts him, gestures to the young lady and says, she was drugged, gang raped, and locked in a bunker with armed guards and not allowed to make a phone call. What were working conditions like before you guys started to help out?
He is funny. I'll give it to him.
Big
that.
Senator is his greatest comedic role ever. But that was pretty funny and pretty right on, I thought.
Yeah, I think so too.
Hot Coffee, the movie. Check it out. You can watch it streaming on Netflix.
Hot Coffee.
Hot Coffee.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a little trip to the market.
All right. But who will be arbitrating our trip to the market?
Us.
Whoever the audience decides.
Our lawyers from the our counsel from the firm of Smith and Wesson. All right, we'll be right back.
To paraphrase J. Neil Schulman.
Yes.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Federal Reserve notes only have value because of a collective hallucination, whereas gold and silver are real, and so is their value. Gold and silver predate government-printed funny money, and they will undoubtedly outlive government-printed funny money. Get some gold and silver into your hands from Midas Resources by going to freedomfiends.com right now and clicking on the Midas Resources banner over on the right. Or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com. Do you want to raise your children outside of the government indoctrination camps that are today's public schools? Check out the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right of freedomfiends.com. The Ron Paul Curriculum is a liberty-based K-12 homeschool course. It covers history, liberty, geography, math, science, and free market economics. Kindergarten through fifth grade are free. Then it's only $250 per family per year. Click on the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available And you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiend's message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
So, did you see this headline? Abu Ghraib torture victims ordered to pay U.S. contractors legal fees, Nima?
What? That is insanity. So you have to pay a fee to your torturers
for the work they did torturing you?
Is that what they're talking about?
I wonder if when that contractor tortures you, they make you sign an agreement that says if you're not happy with your torture, you can't take them to court and you have to take them to private arbitrators that they pick, that the contractor picks.
Wow, yeah. That's your terms of torture.
That's the social contract of torture with a U.S. Contractor.
If you scream when your left testicle gets shocked, you are hereby agree to this contract.
Yeah, I wonder who the torturer was. I'm not going to guess out loud. But,
well, let's read this. This is what? On HuffPo? Okay. So I'm going to just read the first few graphs.
Read it out loud, yeah.
Yeah, I'll read the first few. Okay. A federal judge on Wednesday ordered 4 Iraqis who were imprisoned at the infamous Abu Ghraib prison to pay nearly $14,000 in legal fees to defense contractor CACI in Arlington, Virginia, an Arlington, Virginia-based company that supplied interrogators to the U.S. government during the Iraq War. The decision in favor of CACI stemmed from a lawsuit filed by the former prisoners in 2008, alleging that the employees directed the torture of prisoners at Abu Ghraib. The suit was dismissed in June when U.S. District Judge Gerald Bruce Lee ruled that because the alleged acts took place on foreign soil, CACI was, quote, immune from suit in U.S. court.
Wow.
So a technicality. So you have to pay their legal fees for making them get on their suits and go to court and have some kind of accountability for the awful, inhumane torture they inflicted upon you.
That's insane.
That is insane. Lee, however, did not directly address the question of whether CACI employees took part in the mistreatment of prisoners. The treatment of detainees at Abu Ghraib exploded into an international scandal, I think you all remember, in 2004 when shocking photos emerged of prisoners being stacked on top of each other, threatened with dogs, and sexually abused.
You know, there's a movie I'm looking at I might want to watch. It's called Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. 2006 documentary made by Robert Greenwald, no relation, I don't think, and Brave New Films. Specifically, the film claims that 4 major contractors, Blackwater, KBR, Halliburton, CACI, and Titan, are overbilling the U.S. government and doing substandard work while endangering the lives of American soldiers and private citizens. Which is, you know, kind of a minarchist approach to it. Like, they're not doing that. They're not torturing more efficiently enough. But
Right. They're not doing this horrible stuff and giving us the best price. You know,
yeah.
The problem,
which
is the
actually
price.
isn't there a whistleblower that Obama went after legally who was like he worked for the CIA or DHS, and the whistle he was blowing wasn't they're doing horrible things. It was they could do them more efficiently and they're way overbilling for it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just awful. That's why I really think that the essence of how this whole thing changes is the root of the non-aggression principle and universalizing morality amongst people. Because if it's not that, then it's just tinkering at the edges and getting people to make the torture and the war machine and the police state more efficient.
More efficient, yeah. Do you know what cost-plus contracts are?
Mm-mm.
It's a, I learned about this from the Gary North book, Government by Emergency. You know, it's interesting. Today I heard on CNN or MSNBC, it was some talking head used the term, government by crisis, talking about the partial close down. It's kind of interesting. I think that that was a, you know, cause Gary North has been like a respected economist for like 40 years. I mean, he makes a lot of money as an advisor on people, how people should do investments. And he's a Austrian type economist, not a, Keynesian. The bad kind, Keynesian. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I learned about cost plus contracts from him. This is something that the U.S. started doing during World War II, and they've done ever since for government things, especially for military or the space program. It's a way to like beat inflation with the contracts for the provider. Like, so even if things inflate wildly after the contract is signed, the people delivering the goods to the United States military still make whatever they like, that amount of buying power of profit. So what it is they don't get paid X amount of dollars for each widget. They get paid X percentage over the price of manufacturing. And the way what happens is this encourages, this is where you get $900 hammers from. It encourages contractors to build things instead of like going to the lowest bidder for supplies for their widgets, they go to the highest bidder. And instead of trying to maximize the cost of research like they would in the free market, in the private market, they spend as much as they can on it. Yeah. And that's why the government wastes way more than it even needs to of stolen money as it is.
Wow. Yeah, just completely backwards incentives. And of course, if it wasn't a government but some private company or group of citizens trying to buy things, they're obviously not going to ever think of something like a cost plus contract. I mean, why would you ever think that? No, you make the product, and then if I like it, I might buy it if I have enough money. So you better make sure that that price is as low as you can get it.
Yeah.
But this is the exact opposite of what you would get in any kind of market transaction. That's just awful. No, I didn't even know about that, man.
Yep. It's one of the tiny, tiny things wrong with the government, according to Gary North. That book is really interesting because there's really, it makes a perfect argument for minarchy or anarchy or libertarianism, minarchy or anarchy, completely on an economic basis instead of a moral basis. Now, I think that later, I haven't read that much of what he's written lately, but I think some of it later is more the moral imperative. But I mean, you read this book and it just, you just look at it with a clear mind. Any intelligent person would read this and say, government cannot work. And this was written in 83. And it's gotten magnitudes worse since then.
Yeah.
There's a great quote in it from Harry Brown, the Libertarian Party candidate who Ian Freeman was backing back like 10 years ago. Harry Brown has died since then. He's passed away. But he has an excellent quote in this book. It's, the government is good at one thing. It knows how to break your legs, then hand you a crutch and say, see, if it weren't for the government, you wouldn't be able to walk.
You wouldn't have the crutch. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Which is kind of funny because Hubert Selby, in the documentary I made about him, there's kind of a running thing that's mentioned several times in the movie about a crutch that he got from the government, literally. Like, it was one of those aluminum canes that you can buy at Walmart for, like, you know, $12 or something, you know, it's adjustable wooden or not wooden, aluminum canes that you can buy anywhere.
Yeah.
And he was in the Merchant Marine in World War II, and he was bringing beef cattle to the troops on the ship, and he caught tuberculosis from the cattle, and he got really sick and had to have one lung removed and then part of another lung, and was horribly sick his whole life, and ended up being a heroin addict because of the morphine addiction from the lung surgeries. And, you know, finally got clean and became a great writer and became well known and respected, and but still was like broke a lot of his life, even though he made two Hollywood movies, Requiem for a Dream and Last Exit to Brooklyn. And there's one of his friends is being interviewed in this, and he's like, yeah, I remember one day he came over and he says, he had this aluminum cane and he said, I finally got something out of that fucking government, and he held up the cane and he says, And we were eating breakfast somewhere, and when we left, he had to go back and get the cane. He forgot it. He didn't even need it that much at that point, but just he was so happy he got something out of that fucking government. It was like a $12 cane or a $20 cane.
Nice. Yeah, I think Stefan Kinsella was talking on the Bad Quaker podcast, and Ben Stone was bringing up the point that, you know, one of the great things about things like the government shutdown and everything that's going wrong is it'd be nice sometimes, I think, if it gets really bad, you know, the worse it gets, the more people realize how silly it is because the government's just so bad or the state's just so bad at everything. And Stefan was brought up the point that, hey, you know, the government's really good at a couple things. You know, they're really good at destruction and they're really good at propaganda.
They'll break your legs and hand you a cane and say
that's exactly it. Yeah, that's the long way of saying it.
You finally got something out of that fucking government. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Worms
and all sorts of things.
Worms, a guide to recognizing your worms.
Yeah. So how long do you think they're going to let this whole shutdown thing go for?
Man, you know, I read on Talkers Magazine every week has this little section of what are the most popular topics in talk radio. And I think that they use some kind of computer algorithm. Like, I don't think it's just random. I think the big shows turn in show notes or something, or they do it from their websites or something. And, you know, this week, the beginning of Obamacare and the government shutdown are obviously the two biggest things, but it's like, I kind of don't even want to talk about either of them because it's the same chapter, different book, but I'll talk about them.
I wanted to bitch about people. Like, there's a morning show here that I listen to, the Dudley and Bob show.
Yeah.
And also I think Jon Stewart's kind of going off on this line. And there's this crybaby mentality that, look, Republicans, you lost. It's a law. If you want it changed, then you have to vote it down and quit shutting the government down as a political move. And they keep coming back to this thing like, it's law. You have to obey it. And I just think, these are the people that call themselves liberals.
Backed Martin Luther King when he was disobeying bad laws as he rightfully should have. Yeah.
Exactly. How does that just completely go over their heads that you are saying that these people need to be forced to do something that they don't want to do, that they don't want to comply with, that they think is a bad idea just because of some arcane legal way of getting it into this thing that you call a law? You know,
they also broke the law in passing it. I mean, they did things. If they weren't breaking the law, they were certainly breaking the spirit of the law. I mean, there's a lot of talk about that the president kind of blackmailed people that weren't going to vote for it into voting for it by doing things like calling them up. This is conjecture. I mean, I've heard this happen. I don't know that it did, but that he allegedly called up senators and said, like, I'm going to take that military base out of your district. You're going to lose all the jobs there. Things like that. Yeah. You know,
That's the game. That's politics, man. It's dirty. And the thing about people saying, oh, it's a law. Well, you know what else is a law? It's a law that Congress has to pass and agree upon a budget or the government doesn't get funded. So that's just as much a law as Obamacare is, folks. You know?
Yeah.
Your argument is bunk on so many levels.
I don't know. I guess my whole thought on the thing is, they're not going far enough, you know, strip the whole thing down to nothing. I mean, I saw today there was a press conference I caught a minute of on TV of like the CEOs of Goldman Sachs and a bunch of the like Uber bankster types on the White House lawn, like making a plea to America of why they need to call their congressmen and get them to stop this madness. You know, basically the guys who were given trillions of dollars of taxpayer money because they couldn't manage their $1 trillion businesses and still fly around on private jets and probably flew to the White House today on a private jet, basically saying, please think of the children. Give us more money, you know?
Right. And I think the silver lining here is that people view it as BS, you know, because all the stories in the press, they're so sensationalized about this giant government shutdown. Oh, it's such the big deal. And like you said, everybody's talking about it. But all they can really point to is things like a couple had to postpone their wedding because they wanted to do it at a national park. Is that really as bad as it gets? Is that really like Somalia levels of children starving and bombs flying like you're in Yemen or something? I mean, nobody cares about any of this stuff. But the fact that nobody cares, and you know, the average people I talk to, they don't care. Like my boss came in the other day and was like, "What about that government shutdown?" I'm like, "They're not doing anything. I wish they'd shut the whole thing down." He's like laughing. He's like, "Yeah, it's just a big show." I mean, everybody knows it's a show. But the fact that the mainstream media is trying to make it out to be a big deal, I think bodes really well, because maybe it'll be like Tom DiLorenzo said, like maybe this is a turning point where people will realize that the American mainstream media is nothing but Pravda. Because there was a point in the Soviet Union when people just got there and realized that everything Pravda says is BS. So anything that they say will think that the opposite thing is true.
Well, the ironic thing is now Pravda and Russia Today, which is another state-owned Russian media outlet, when either of them tell you something about America, it's probably more true than what the American press is telling you.
Right, because they're critical. They actually take a look at things, and they don't have this – you know, it really reminds me of –
They don't love Obama.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not like, because Obama, dude.
Well, yeah. Well, what does Obama say? He says it's a federal family. And I really feel like the media thinks it's their job to be like the mother in the relationship, and they will like make everything sound like it's okay. Like, oh, daddy's just on vacation. You know, he didn't leave me forever. He's just on vacation.
The media thinks their job is to make the family newsletter and the Christmas card look nice.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But even though it's all BS, but they just got to put that happy face and keep it up for appearances. You know?
Yeah. You know, you don't say in the family newsletter that Billy came out is gay and Christy is shacked up with a meth biker guy. You say like, Christy found a nice girl and Billy is exploring new venues,
new hobbies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that pretty much hits the nail on the head. I'm done with the government shutdown. Are you?
Yeah, I want to talk about this hilarious mess with the Central Scrutinizer plug-in. Did you see that? I'll send it to you.
The Central Scrutinizer plug-in. What was that? It's, was that a real thing? Did they actually call it the Central
Scrutinizer? Oh, yeah. Look at this link I just – no, I called it that. It's the it's flagger.io. Troll the NSA.
I remember this. Yeah.
Flagger is a browser add-on that automatically puts red flag keywords like bomb, Taliban, and anthrax into the web addresses you visit.
It's really hilarious. I think it's great as a joke. I don't think I'd ever do it. I mean,
I wouldn't either. I especially wouldn't do it because it can make it so some websites don't work and you have to disable it for a minute. And it's like,
right.
I'm such a power user on the web that anything that slows me down would be irritating. But I love that this guy made it. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I love that he made it. And I hope a bunch of younger and more rebellious people with less to lose will do it all the time because it sounds super fun. I'll live vicariously through you. But yeah, the website, the front page of it's pretty hilarious too. Choose your flags, pressure cooker, conceal, LAX, murder, death to America, and a message for the NSA. Stop watching us.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. And I think the web design is nice. The marketing is funny.
You know what I learned that's kind of interesting from this Gary North book? Getting back to real stuff for a minute, is when people like unions say we need to tax the 1% corporations more to get us more money for the people, it actually works against most people because all of the pension funds in America, all the large ones, the union ones, the private ones, and the government ones, all of them invest like 40% or more of their holdings in stock in the top 1,000 corporations in America.
Right.
So you're taxing yourself when you do that. Why not just be free, man?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's because people have it in their mind that without taxing the rich, then all of a sudden we're not going to have all these services provided anymore.
Yeah.
They don't ever think that maybe the services provided shouldn't be based on a system like taxation. You know, that just never crosses their mind.
I don't need an add-on to like add keywords that'll get me watched. Like I just got
– You have the Freedom Fiends,
I just got an email from a fan that said, "Hey, Michael, you've probably heard, but Edward Abbey was way more than the grandfather of the eco-terrorist. He may not have had all the answers or the right answers, but he had some fucking awesome questions, ideas, and observations." And it's like, eco-terrorist is in the fucking email. That set something off somewhere. And he's it not did. Saying that's a good thing. He's saying, like, he was not that. He was more than that, whatever. man.
Hey, man. I don't even care anymore. Oh, I did watch Let Go, Let Gov, the South Park episode.
Good. Review it. I didn't watch it. I turned you onto it without watching it because it sounded
interesting. It was all right, man. I don't know. I kind of feel like...
South Park had jumped the shark.
I don't know if it's completely jumped the shark yet, but I feel like in a lot of episodes, I feel like they're trying to hedge, you know, like they're not trying to take a strong stance one way or the other with this episode.
Yeah.
Because Cartman, for the first 10 minutes, like the main subplot at the beginning, is he is on his phone constantly, and he's talking on speakerphone, and he's complaining loudly about how the NSA is keeping him from having privacy. But the joke is obviously he's on speakerphone while he's complaining about having no privacy.
Yeah.
And like Kyle is rolling his eyes and saying, if you want privacy, then just talk on your phone instead of on speakerphone.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's kind of like making fun of him. And he's kind of being a blowhard about it. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go on my Twitter feed and I'm going to go on my blog and I'm going to talk about how the NSA is keeping me from having privacy.
So that's kind of making fun of people who do normal things and complain. Like, it's kind of sounds to me like it's kind of saying, hey, if you got nothing to hide, don't worry about it. Or saying, like, there's nothing you can do, so don't worry about it. You get that feeling?
I think the latter, which is better than the former, certainly. I mean, in the South Park, and so they make it kind of funny. Like, they throw in some good Alec Baldwin jokes. And eventually, I mean, I guess how that sort of plays out is Cartman just cuts out the middleman. Him and Alec Baldwin get this new thing called Shitter instead of Twitter, and it's plugged directly into your brain, so your thoughts go directly to the internet. You don't need your thumbs anymore.
Man.
And so it's Eric Cartman and Alec Baldwin live shitting their thoughts to each other.
NSA would love that.
Yeah.
They're working on it. I mean, literally, I'm sure they're working on that.
Yeah.
Sure the U.S. and other governments are working on ways to read minds so people can't lie. Like, so even if you lie, it doesn't matter. They'll know what you're thinking.
There you go. They do have a few decent takedowns of the NSA, though. Like, Cartman goes to apply to work at the NSA, you know, kind of Edward Snowden style. And the guy's walking through the NSA with his coffee mug, and he's got, like, a stance like Lumberg, the boss in Office Space. And people will be like, hey, boss, I got this stuff for you. And he's like, all right, what's going on? And he's like, so Susie Smith is going to pick up her son, and then after that she's going to take him to soccer practice, and then they're going to eat KFC for dinner. That's like his briefing that he's giving the NSA guy. So that's kind of cute. And then, of course, Butters, as is so often the case in modern South Parks, Butters completely sells the episode because he becomes evangelical for the government, right? It becomes a religious thing. And I think that's the great thing about the episode is they push that concept that we've been talking about, that the state is just a new type of faith. It's the new religion. And Butters kind of gets an inkling of it, and he decides to go to the DMV. And what he does is he waits in line, and he goes up to the big old honking fat lady sitting at the DMV, and he just starts confessing. he's like, well, I thought about this lady, and then she was in a magazine, and I ripped it out, and I took it home, and I don't know why, but I just cut a hole where her mouth was, and then I put my wiener in it. he's like, I already sang My Country 'Tis of Thee 100 times, and I even watched America's Got Talent twice. What else could I do?
Well, that's she goes, I like that because that's the first on TV that I've heard of where people actually, who aren't Fox News Republicans, make fun of people for worshiping at the God of the State.
Yeah. And that's totally where it goes. And so I guess in that sense, it was really, really great. Because then later on, some Jehovah's Witnesses come by to proselytize to Butters, and they've got their little tracts, and one of them is like a lady getting burnt in hellfire. And he's like, "Aw, lady, why would you give me that? I used to do naughty things like show people pictures like this. And then I got the government." And he's like, "Come on, let's go to the DMV. Have you read any DMV literature lately?"
Does he convert them?
Yes, he converts them, and then they all go across town. And then the thing in the DMV is, you know, there starts to be this group of people congregating and singing praises to Obama. And in the end, Cartman gets kicked out of the NSA, and he cries. And he's like, and now I'm going to have to go to Russia. You know, it's kind of like he's Edward Snowden, which was just kind of like, that's not kind of cool,
That's the
guys.
Thing about South Park is like they so nail it sometimes, and then they're just.
But then they have to hedge it, and I can't tell if that's because they feel that way, you know, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, or if that's their legal department, or if that's some kind of other prior restraint going on with Comedy Central.
It could be all of the above combined with the fact that they have to fucking churn one out every week.
Yeah,
you know, write it, direct it, draw it, produce it, edit it, score it, everything.
Yeah, that's totally true. But in the end, Butters even converts Cartman, and so that's when he says "let go" and "let gov." He says, "Just let go, let gov," which is obviously a takeoff on "let go, let God."
Yep.
Yeah. So it had some good moments. But yeah, I kind of wanted to get into the media thing because we didn't talk about the end of Breaking Bad yet. And can we do that?
Still
verboten or what?
No. So let's end with this, and we'll just say this is a spoiler alert. If you haven't seen up through the final episode of Breaking Bad, stop listening now and come back later after you've watched it.
There you go. So, man. Wow.
Man. I loved the last episode. It was great. And DJ said it was the first one in a whole season she's enjoyed. She said, if I had a Twitter account, when it was over, she turned to me and smiled and said, if I had a Twitter account, here's what I would tweet right now. RIP Walter White. I'm glad I no longer have to hate you. That was sweet.
Yeah. The loose ends got tied up really well.
Yep.
It's probably I told my wife, you know, it's probably the best ending season or series finale I've seen for a major TV show, because everything was succinct. You know, Jesse lived. I was happy to see that. Jesse put the responsibility on killing Walt back on Walt. You know, Jesse still sort of stayed pure in that sense.
Yep.
He didn't take out his revenge. He didn't succumb to his base desire to see Walt lose. And that last scene when Walt just looks over his meth lab at what he's done.
He had to die in his meth lab.
He did. And he's genuinely happy. I felt like when he laid down, what I felt like was this was, you know, it's obviously not a dream. They didn't go that route. But this is, he was going to end up dead anyway. You know, at the beginning it sets up that he's got cancer. He doesn't have much time left. And there's that scene when he's deciding whether or not to accept treatment. And at first he says, no, I'm not going to accept treatment. I want to die how I want to die. And I feel like in the end, maybe he didn't live exactly how he wanted to live for that whole time, but I think he died how he wanted to die.
Yeah, and brilliant, brilliant writing and storytelling with having him give the money to the Grey Matter people, because they could fucking get it to his family in a clean way that no one would question. And he even says, like, you know, say it's liberal guilt if anyone asks you.
Yeah. Oh, and the way to keep them honest. That was hilarious. Badger and Skinny Pete.
And it was nice to see Badger and Skinny Pete back for the last episode. You know, they were a small but important part of the show, and it's kind of nice to see them again.
I also really enjoyed the resolution with the leader of the neo-Nazis, man.
Yeah.
Hey, the guy's sitting there, you know, you want your money, right? But no, Walt didn't want the money anymore. He knew that was the last night, and he just didn't say a word without a beat.
And he pulls out a cigarette before he gets shot, which is kind of an homage to, like, old tough guy Westerns, but it's kind of also, I think, an homage to Chicken Man's ending. Like, he straightens his tie.
That's his habit.
They died as they lived, you know?
Right.
I had a few predictions that were right, but not very detailed. I did predict that
that the ricin was going to be used.
Yeah.
You thought it was going to be used. Walt was going to use it himself. And I said, I don't know. And you said, well, it's definitely going to be used. And so you hedged your bets and you won.
Well, I said you don't show a gun in the first act if you're not going to use it in the third act. And the ricin is a gun. And he went back specifically to get it. I don't know. I also don't know. And this is something I don't want to Google because it'll trigger more stuff. But I wonder if it was stupid of him to tell Lydia that he'd poisoned her with ricin, because I wonder if ricin is a thing where if you get to a hospital and know that's what poisoned you, if they can save you or not. I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I guess it would have been less than 24 hours, right? So
yeah,
I don't know.
I have another suspension of disbelief problem with something in it. Is it ends with Jesse driving away, and you're assuming Jesse's free and clear. He's out of everything. He can start his life over. But his fucking prints are all over that lab, man.
Yeah.
And his prints are on file. So he's going to get questioned at least, and probably implicated in some way. there is an homage that I'm convinced is intentional to the movie Taxi Driver. It's in the very last scene of Breaking Bad when the camera slowly pulls up to the ceiling and shows Walt dying and a bunch of police coming in from the left, cautiously holding their guns out. That is how Taxi Driver ends. I mean, Taxi Driver has a little like denouement after that of like mm-hmm. a letter from the girl's mother and father thanking the taxi driver, De Niro, for Travis Bickle for saving his daughter. But it ends with, you know, a room full of people who were shot, one guy who's, you know, everybody's dead, one guy's shot and alive. And it's like it's a shot from the ceiling of a bunch of cops coming in from the left in semi-slow motion holding their guns.
Yeah. It was shot so beautifully, though, the end of Breaking Bad, that last shot that just rises and it just keeps rising. And the music choice, oh, man.
Yeah.
The Baby Blue, it was so perfect.
Yeah.
It was his Baby Blue, and he died in the arms of his baby. And I thought that, to me, the pivotal moment in the whole episode was when he goes to see Skyler, and she's talking to him about it, and she thinks he's about to say, I did all this for my family. But he deviates for the first time in the whole series. He says, I did it for me. You know, for the first time.
I noticed that too.
He's actually honest. And I think that was sort of the watershed moment, because he must have thought that previously, you know, but in this last little segment, he must have thought, you know, I've been lying to myself and everybody else this whole time. I got to make it right. And so it signals that at least he's got that self-awareness. And now that he's self-aware enough, he can finally end the whole thing.
Yep. And the name of the episode was Felina, which is a reference to the song. Who is it? Jeff Walker. That is on the tape that he finds in the vulva that he steals in New Hampshire.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of funny because, it's Marty Robbins. Like, that is something you would find in New Hampshire, is a Volvo with a country western song in it. You know, you'd find, like, a total yuppie liberal car, you know, with a redneck country music cassette in it. That's so New Hampshire. You'd probably find a gun, too. You'd probably find a gun and an Obama sticker, but... That'd be more Vermont. In Vermont, you'd find a Volvo with a gun in it. And
it could have been somebody from Vermont just stopping by.
No, I had New Hampshire plates. Remember, they show them.
That's right.
You can't show New Hampshire plates in the first act if you don't go to New Hampshire in the third act of a season.
That's right. But yeah, and I was so happy to see the neo-Nazis completely destroyed too, because those guys sucked, man.
Yeah.
And I really thought that Walt had not planned for what had happened in there. I thought that he had a different plan, and he was going to try to draw them to the desert or something.
Nah, I knew there was something up when he was specific about where he parked when they told him not to park there.
I guess I should have been.
Which I also have a suspension of disbelief of, like, if they're trying to get him into a controlled situation. The guy was like, okay, well, whatever. I don't think they'd be like that, but...
Yeah.
Maybe.
Do you think he had thought of his line when they decided to execute him? Do you think he had thought of how to get the execution to stop, how to get the leader to say, no, wait a minute, I'm going to show you Jesse? Do you think he thought of that on the spot, or if he planned
it? No, I think he went to shoot Jesse and just came up with that later, because I watched Talking Bad, you know, where they have the cast and crew.
The
and
post-game. Yeah. That's how big it is. It's like a football game where they have a post-game show.
I've never watched a whole one of those, but I watched that one because they had the creator and, like, most of the crew. I mean, they had Chicken Man, they had Mike, they brought back dead people. And there was one thing I didn't understand that the creator of the show explained, was why Walt takes off his Rolex and leaves it at the phone booth. He said it was two reasons.
It was a continuity issue, right?
No. It was that Jesse gave it to him, and he's on his way to go kill Jesse, and he doesn't want to wear a gift Jesse gave him. That was part of it. And the other part of it is that...
I thought it was that he didn't have it on in the scenes that are like the flashback scenes or the flash forward scenes at the beginning of the season. He's not wearing it. And so it was like, we need to have a reason for him to not be wearing it in those scenes.
Maybe. No, because he was given that in the previous season. He's been wearing
exactly.
it a long time.
And he wasn't wearing it in those first things.
Maybe that's the real reason, and they just made up this reason. But the creator said that it was partially because he didn't want to be wearing a gift from Jesse when he's going to kill Jesse. And part of it was he doesn't need it anymore. It was kind of charity. It was kind of his quiet Walter White version of Jesse throwing all his money out of the car window. You know? It was like the next...
Here's a nice watch.
Yeah, guys, the next person who uses that payphone is going to get a $60,000 surprise.
Yeah, well, there's some deleted scenes. Wasn't there a deleted scene where somebody has it? Somebody else has it?
I don't know.
I read a thing about the talking. I didn't watch the talking bad, but the only information I got is what somebody repeated from it. So it could be wrong.
I don't know. I only got two more things to say.
All right.
Unless you got more.
No?
One is Walt has never had any politics, and I like that about him. He's never had any morality, really, either. He's had his own morality. But the only time he even ever listens to talk radio is after blowing up an old folks' home to hear the news.
Yeah.
And,
so you can see what he did.
Yeah.
It was a very Cantwellian move.
And the other thing is you had to bring it back. The other thing is, the DBC principle. It's not the non-aggression principle. It's the don't be Cantwellian principle.
Yeah.
Okay, the other thing is, I've criticized you before for how you pronounce ringer. You say the G hard like ringer, and you say ringer. Singer as singer. Sheldon Cooper says ringer as ringer, and his character and the actor are from Houston. So you're right, I was wrong.
They're from East Texas, though. They're probably north.
The actor's from Houston, the character's from East Texas.
Oh, okay. Oh,
but
gotcha.
It's a Texan thing, apparently.
Yeah, fair enough. You stupid Yankees, I don't care how you talk.
All right, brother man. Good show. Yeah, good geez. Show.
Good show, Governor.
Got any guns, Governor? I'll just take those.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.